For Radio Catskill, this is Rosie Starr. Welcome to Farm and Country, locally produced radio about rural life in the Catskills and the Delaware River Valley. On today's show, Barbara Arundel, Director of DCS, Damascus Citizens for Sustainability, shares information and initiatives about preserving the Skinner's Falls Bridge in Milanville, Pennsylvania. She spoke to us at a recent event to celebrate the bridge that took place inside Delaware Hall at the Union in Narrowsburg, New York. Then Stephanie Phillips continues her conversation with Kathy Dawkins and Debbie Burke from Calico Geese Quilters. In this segment, Now You Know, we'll hear about quilting machine maintenance. All of that and Keith Hubbard's Star Talk report after news headlines from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder. President-elect Donald Trump's border czar, Tom Homan, says the incoming administration is preparing for large-scale immigration raids in multiple cities next week. Appearing on Fox News last night, Tom Homan said a day after Trump is inaugurated on Monday, they will start going after people in the country illegally.
On Tuesday, you're going to expect ISIS. ICE is finally going to go out and do their job. We're going to take the handcuffs off ICE and let them go arrest criminal aliens. That's what's going to happen.
The Wall Street Journal is reporting that the raids will last all week. The president-elect is due in Washington, D.C. today. He is to participate in a series of events this weekend. Plans for his inauguration on Monday have been scrambled because of frigid weather. He is to take his oath of office inside the U.S. Capitol. Aid organizations are mobilizing at the Egyptian border with Gaza in anticipation of a ceasefire deal between Israel and Hamas taking effect early tomorrow. Part of the deal is to allow hundreds of aid trucks into Gaza and an easing of Israeli restrictions, which aid organizations have said contributed to the crisis. NPR's Hadil Al-Shalchi reports.
The United Nations says it's ready to ramp up the delivery of aid to Palestinians. It says nearly all of Gaza's 2.1 million Palestinians face high levels of food insecurity. The International Committee of the Red Cross says it's prepared to facilitate the release of the Hamas-held hostages and Israeli-held Palestinian detainees, and it's scaling up its humanitarian response. A European Union delegation will arrive in Cairo next week to help reopen the Palestinian side of the Rafah border to allow the aid in. Six Israeli hospitals are also preparing to receive hostages. Medical staff say they're getting ready to treat a number of medical conditions, physical and psychological. Hadil Al-Shalchi, NPR News, Tel Aviv.
The popular social media site TikTok says it will go dark in the United States starting tomorrow unless it receives assurances that the law banning the app, unless its Chinese parent company sells it, won't be enforced. NPR's Windsor Johnston reports on the decision following the Supreme Court's ruling to uphold the law.
TikTok says it will pull the plug on Sunday unless it's given more clarity from the Biden administration regarding the ban. The White House on Friday said it's leaving the future of the app in the hands of the incoming Trump administration. Carl Tobias, a law professor at the University of Richmond, says Trump has several options to keep the app running in the U.S.
The best thing that Trump could do is to work with Congress and say, we're trying to have an effective solution. We don't want to cut off 170 million U.S. users.
The bipartisan law would force TikTok's Chinese-owned parent company, ByteDance, to divest its ownership or cease operating in the U.S. Windsor Johnston, NPR News, Washington.
This is NPR.
Last week on Wait, Wait, actor Josh Gad explained why he felt he could write a memoir at the age of just 43.
And as it started to expand, it just felt like, okay, this may be a story worth telling. And then a publisher paid me, and I was like, okay, it is.
I'm Peter Sagal. Join us for the stories worth making fun of this week with special guest comedian Rose Matafeo. That's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Sunday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
Support comes from Damascus Citizens for Sustainability, fighting for clean air, land, and water since 2008, both locally and beyond. Information online at their Main Street storefront in Narrowsburg or their office in the Narrowsburg Union. DamascusCitizens.org.
Welcome back to Farm and Country. I'm your host, Rosie Starr. On today's show, Barbara Arundel, Director of DCS, Damascus Citizens for Sustainability, shares information and initiatives about preserving the Skinner's Falls Bridge in Milanville, Pennsylvania. She spoke to us at a recent event celebrating the bridge that took place inside the Delaware Hall inside the Union in Narrowsburg, New York. Stephanie Phillips continues her conversation with Kathy Dawkins and Debbie Burke from Calico Geese Quilters. In this segment, Now You Know, we'll hear about quilting machine maintenance. First, here is Keith Hubbard with this week's Star Talk report. Thank you for joining us on Radio Catskill for this week's locally produced Farm and Country.
For Farm and Country, I'm Keith Hubbard, and this is Star Talk. We will have the opportunity to see two planets pair up in the sky this week. The pairing will be visible for several hours in the southwestern sky after sunset. Venus and Saturn will be separated by a little more than 2 degrees. Both planets will be in the southwestern sky as the sun sets on Monday. Venus, being the brighter of the two planets, will show herself first. She will become visible around 5 p.m., and about 30 minutes later, Saturn will be visible 30 degrees above the horizon. Venus will be above Saturn in the sky. The duo will be visible for 2.5 hours before sinking below the horizon. Venus will be extremely bright, which is why she will appear before Saturn. With Venus shining at magnitude -4.5, she will be the brightest object by far in that region of the sky. Saturn will be shining as bright as a first magnitude star, but Venus will be more than 150 times brighter than the ringed planet. After Monday, Venus will drift away from the horizon as Saturn drifts toward the horizon and the sun. Saturn will continue to drift closer to the sun through the end of January and into February. By mid-February, Saturn will be lost in the glare of the setting sun, while Venus will still be visible. Be sure to catch the conjunction of Venus and Saturn in the southwestern sky shortly after sunset on Monday. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for future Star Talk segments, my email address is startalk@farmandcountry.org. For Farm and Country and Star Talk, this has been Keith Hubbard, reminding you to keep looking up.
On Sunday, January 12th, members of our Delaware River Valley community gathered inside the Union Building in Narrowsburg, New York, a large red brick structure that was once a Sullivan County school. The Delaware Hall was buzzing with folks sharing music, poetry, and sentiments in celebration of the Skinner's Falls Bridge that stands in Milanville, Pennsylvania. The event was designed and produced by Cynthia Nash and Kathy Geary and available to you on the WJFF Radio Catskill Facebook page. Built in 1902, the Skinner's Falls Bridge in Milanville is listed on the U.S. Register of Historic Places. Like anything else that's over 100 years of age, it's in need of maintenance and repair, but the Skinner's Falls Bridge is in danger of being torn down and not replaced. There are so many people that want this bridge to remain part of our Milanville community. Because it has unique architectural and structural ornamentation, the Skinner's Falls Bridge represents historic value to the Delaware River Valley and the Milanville Historic District. I spoke with many participants who expressed their cherished sentiments, and we'll hear those in future segments. But today, let's begin with Barbara Arundel, Director of DCS, Damascus Citizens for Sustainability. She'll share information and initiatives about preserving the Skinner's Falls Bridge in Milanville, Pennsylvania. Barbara refers to PennDOT, which is the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation.
Hi, I'm Barbara Arendelle, Director of Damascus Citizens for Sustainability, and we're here in the Union, which is a beautiful facility and great stuff going on. Thankfully to Kathy and Brendan Wyden, who have made this all happen, so the Union is fabulous. The Skinners Falls Bridge has sort of an execution warrant on it via the governor of Pennsylvania and PennDOT. PennDOT, I believe, fed him inaccurate information, telling him that the bridge was about to fall down because of movement of the New York abutment. And in actual fact, we went through the 183-page inspection report. That's the latest one from AECOM, PennDOT's contractor. And that report shows that there's no change in the cracks and in the movement and in the position of the abutment. No change for most of the measurements they made for over a year. Some measurements, no change for 2 or 3 years. Not all the measurements are made every year. So the idea that there's an emergency is totally false, made up, and inaccurate. But the governor was responding, I believe, to what PennDOT told him. And we have to convince him to reconsider, which I'm hopeful he will. I'm also hopeful that the Agency for Historic Preservation will also not concur on this execution warrant. This, I understand, is a procedure that PennDOT has used all over Pennsylvania. That's according to Nathan Holt, who's the director of historicbridges.org. And he knows bridges all over Pennsylvania. So, no, the bridge is not going to be destroyed if we can help make that a reality. And it can be restored to its original capacity and purpose of transporting people, small cars, small trucks across the river. There's a heavy bridge 5 miles in each direction for larger vehicles. We're asking for contributions to support our legal efforts. DCS can be reached online, DamascusCitizens.org, and just look for the donate button.
Barbara, that's a very concise overview bringing us to 2025. I appreciate that. On a personal level, what are your sentiments? Would you like the Skinners Falls Bridge in Milanville to be preserved? How do you feel about that?
Of course I want it preserved. It can be restored. Every entity that has looked at it has said it can be restored, including PennDOT's own contractor. Why are we waiting until something terrible happens? No. I mean, it's a structure in a river that PennDOT has not done maintenance on for close to 20 years. I've also read a good portion of this inspection report and previous ones. It's in our comment. If you look at our website, it's the first post that comes up. And PennDOT's contractor says, do this within 6 months. And PennDOT comes behind and says, we can wait. And they have done nothing for years and years and years, even though it's been ordered by their own contractor, and they have funding to do it. Instead, they want to blow it up, literally, with explosives, blow it up. And I am totally against that. I want it preserved.
Thank you so much for sharing your knowledge and sentiments, Barbara Arendelle. You do so much for Damascus Citizens for Sustainability in our community. Thank you for sharing this.
You're welcome.
The website DamascusCitizensForSustainability.org has more information on the initiatives to save the Skinners Falls Bridge. Their offices are located in Narrowsburg inside the Union Building, 7 Erie Avenue, and at the DCS Community Hub, 25 Main Street. ¶¶
Good morning. This is Stephanie Phillips with Now You Know for Farm and Country. This morning I'll be speaking with Kathy Dawkins and Debbie Burke, past president and current president of Calico Geese Quilters. This group meets at least weekly and sometimes in between as well at the Cornell Cooperative Extension in Liberty to make beautiful quilts.
That is true.
Kathy Dawkins' family has been quilting for generations.
My mother is from the South. My father is from Sullivan County for many generations. And so I have quilts from both sides of my family. And I'm fascinated that, generally speaking, the quilts that were created in the North were much more functional. So frequently you might have a beautiful quilt top made and set aside as a family heirloom, but the functional quilts were not necessarily so beautiful. They used whatever fabric was available and covered old blankets.
A lot of times they would use fabric, though, from the feed sacks.
Absolutely.
When they got the feed for the animals, they were all in decorative fabrics, and they would recycle, and they would use that fabric to make quilts, quilt tops.
Now, in the South, conversely, they did not have thick, heavy blankets in the center. Sometimes they just had a sheet, and sometimes they had nothing, so you might just have two layers of fabric. So it was a very different thing, the quilting product in the different geographic areas.
You might think of feathers. Would you put feathers in a quilt?
I don't.
That would be a comforter. In my old house, we had both feather beds and feather comforters, and sometimes you might have light quilting to keep the feathers
from shifting
too much. But mostly I have wool blankets that were covered and recovered and recovered again.
I have a couple quilts that were my grandmother's, and one is done in all wool. The quilt top is done in wool, and it was made from men's suits. And then another one is the calico fabrics, and I think some of them are actually feed sacks that they used to make the top.
Feed sacks don't seem very attractive.
But they were beautiful.
They were beautiful.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Yeah, they were beautiful. Very colorful.
They weren't just burlap.
No. They were actual fabric and colorful.
And you mentioned sewing machines. Do people come with sewing machines?
Some do, some don't. I'll take you on a tack that you didn't anticipate, but people don't always have a machine.
If you're a beginner. If you're a beginner, you don't know what to get.
And there are machines. You can go out and buy, you know, anything from Walmart to high-end quilt shops. You can buy a machine. I will also tell you, I have, since my introduction to the guild, I have been introduced to vintage machines. And frankly, I prefer a vintage machine to any modern machine.
Right.
They're more reliable. They're more heavy-duty. They will sew through thicknesses that even expensive modern machines can't handle. So there's a group of people who just love to rescue vintage machines that are on their way to the dump. They rescue them, we renovate them, bring them back into being, and use them routinely for our work.
I'm wondering what you consider vintage. I suspect that I have a vintage machine.
You probably do, and if you want to get rid of it, just let me know.
No, I use it.
I think that vintage is considered anything 50 years old or older, and antique is anything 100 years old or older. I will often tell people you almost need to know what the production year was. If the machine is heavy as lead to move, it's a vintage machine, and don't ever get rid of it. It's valuable. Not in terms of money, but when you have those old machines that are all metal, they're not going to fail. You need to oil them. You need to occasionally service them. But they will run and run. Those metal machines are
not like the computerized machines today.
Correct.
Yeah, because I have one, and you always have to worry about something failing, you know, because it's an embroidery machine.
Yeah, and once it fails, it fails.
Then it fails. It's done.
Gone.
It's gone. I have to buy a new one.
So we want to know about your machine before we
go. I don't know that it's 50 years
old. I have
old,
one of those.
It might be 40 years old. It's a Singer, yeah.
I'll keep it.
It does break needles occasionally, or I break needles.
I was going to say, that would be your
problem. My machine, it doesn't make a nice smooth.
You haven't been cleaning your machine, have you?
Tension might need to be adjusted, too.
Or you need to oil it, you need to clean it.
You need to love it.
But it really doesn't take much. Your instruction booklet will tell you how to take it apart and clean it.
Yep.
And
you actually have to take it apart. I use a brush.
There's a brush, but there are a few places where you unscrew and you need to put oil in there. Anything that is metal on metal, you need to oil that. And obviously you're not using it a whole lot, but I had a wonderful member of our guild, Anna Abatello, who lives down in Damascus, Pennsylvania. One day she came to a meeting and she said, "Honey, have you oiled that machine lately?" I said, "Well," next thing you know, she's gone. She's pulled a screwdriver. She's got a can of oil. We've got my machine torn apart. And she said, "Everything that is metal on metal, you need to oil routinely." And I do that, and I think of her every single time I do it.
And what kind of oil are you using?
Sewing machine oil. It's a lightweight machine oil.
I'm thinking I could learn how to take my sewing machine apart to oil it. Right. People must have a lot of different kinds of machines.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Absolutely. But, you know, the basic design of the machine is...
A lot of it is just done with basic straight stitch.
Yeah.
Basic straight stitch is what you need to put it all together. And after that, it's all in what you want to do with it.
They all have a bobbin that turns down in there.
And a needle.
They have a needle that goes down, and the timing has to be perfect. Yeah. For that bobbin to catch that thread and
come back. Synchronized.
It's magic. It's magic.
It's synchronized.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And by the way, a quilt is two pieces of fabric with batting in between. And the quilting is stitching that holds those layers and keeps them from slipping.
And the batting you have to buy.
Yes and no. I have made quilts using an old throw as a batting. I've used a flannel sheet as batting. I have used an old blanket as batting. Or I've gone to the store and bought pre-made cotton batting, polyester batting. I use cotton. So in the old days, people didn't have the luxury of pre-made batting. You would almost always a quilt was something to cover an old blanket.
How long were you president, and what were your duties?
I was president several times, and then I took over once. I was vice president for someone, and then her husband got quite ill, so I took over as president for her. So I was president for 6 years running, but I had been before. But the duties generally are to coordinate, be the interface with the extension, be the interface if we are doing any activities with an outside organization. So when I mentioned those places that we donate quilts to, a lot of coordination with that. As the president, I don't manage the money. We have a treasurer. Actually, we have two co-treasurers, which works out really well. But you do have to oversee the money and understand what's being done with the money and sort of be the person who ensures that when things need to get approval of the full membership, that they do.
You're the front person. Yeah.
Come up with ideas and make adjustments when adjustments are necessary. We alluded to the Saturday workshops, and frankly, a fair amount of what we do is coordinating. Do we want to get an outside teacher to come in and teach us some technique? Do we just want to use the skills and knowledge we have towards a common purpose? Debbie, I'm going to a hand off to you. Debbie has come up with an idea that our guild will work on something with our veterans, which is called Quilts of Honor, and I'll let you talk about that.
They're quilts, and they're done usually in red, white, and blue, and there are specific specifications that you have to follow that they require you to do, which I cannot tell you off the top of my head what they are.
There's a national quilting society?
Yes, there's the Quilts of Valor, they're called. And what you do is you make the quilts, and then we can decide if we want to go to the Coalition for the Veterans and donate them, or go to a nursing home and donate to veterans. But it's just a nice thing to acknowledge the veterans. And so that's a new project we're going to be taking on in 2025.
Do you charge dues for your members? And then what would you spend that money on?
So we do charge dues, and the dues primarily go towards providing us a place to meet. Rather than going to a local fire hall or a local town office, we have an agreement with the extension, because the Calico Geese were part of the Sullivan County Extension before this building was built. and they have walked along hand in hand with the extension over the years. So the extension is kind enough to let us pay them a portion of dues up front. So the bulk of our dues go to pay so that we have a facility to meet in for all those meetings. We charge $40 for dues. A good portion of that money goes to the extension. A small portion goes to the guild itself. And what do we use the money for? Well, we buy
batting.
We will buy bolts, big bolts of batting, because one of the things we do as a group is we create quilts, and in continuing the legend of Connie Stengel, we make quilts for local families to have when they have a baby. Mm-hmm. So we have given over 2,000 baby quilts to people in our community. We also give quilts to the homeless. We give quilts to foster children in our county. We give quilts to Head Start. Head Start in Woodridge has a baby group. And so each year they get a class of these little ones. We make sure each one of those children has a quilt. We also will buy backing for a quilt.
So you don't necessarily make them two-sided.
Well, sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. It depends on what you're doing. And there are all kinds of techniques where you can build a quilt. We have a technique called quilt as you go, where you're building the back and the front at the same time. So there are a lot of different techniques.
So you're buying batting and you're paying for the extension, which is a nice place to meet. If you want to add embroidery or some other kind of embellishment, when do you do that? Do you do it before you put the thing together?
You can. You can. As I said, I use my embroidery machine with the stitches to quilt it. So it's all in what you want to do.
It really depends. So the issue is this. If you're going to machine quilt that quilt, you don't want to have a lot of beading and buttons on it while you're trying to run your machine to quilt it. However, if you're going to do hand quilting, you may want to do all that embellishment before you sandwich it, because you're just going to hand quilt it anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
Okay, when I was reading up on this, which I did, I always do my homework.
She did her homework.
They talk about the seam allowance. How big a seam allowance do you use? Because I'm used to
your regular sewing, you use a 5/8 inch.
5/8 inch.
But in quilting, we use a scant quarter inch.
Yeah.
Generally, with quilting, you iron the seam to one side, and it makes perfect sense, because when you're quilting that top, if you have the seams open, then you can see through that, and the batting can come through. If you iron it to the side, that keeps it closed.
Okay, so then you iron it to the side, and then you have to sew it down.
No. Once you've ironed it down, you iron it down, and then it stays when
it'll
you put
stay.
That batting there.
Yep.
So now you know where you can go on a cold winter day to make quilts. My guests today have been Kathy Dawkins and Debbie Burke, past president and current president of Calico Geese Quilters. If you would like to suggest topics for future Now You Know segments, email me at stephanie@wjffradio.org. This has been Stephanie Phillips for Farm and Country.
We hope that you enjoyed our show this week, with production by Radio Catskill volunteers Keith Hubbard, Stephanie Phillips, and myself, Rosie Starr. Special thanks goes to our guests, Kathy Dawkins and Debbie Burke from Calico Geese Quilters, and Barbara Arundel, Director of DCS, Damascus Citizens for Sustainability. Thanks for listening local to Farm and Country and supporting Radio Catskill. Listen to us on air and on your smartphone. Stream us live at wjffradio.org. We are Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, conversations, and NPR.
Support comes from Damascus Citizens for Sustainability, fighting for clean air, land, and water since 2008, both locally and beyond. Information online at their Main Street storefront in Narrowsburg or their office in the Narrowsburg Union. Damascus